Call the Keys at 301-815-9939 or visit frederickkeys.com.
Hey, this is Tim May. I guarantee you what we talk about this afternoon, you'll be talking about tomorrow morning. It's Ben Maryland Live from 3 to 6 on Free Talk 930 WFMD.
621 at WFMD. Time now for a conversation that we have at least once a month with our county executive. Her name is Jan Gardner. She joins us via the telephone. Good morning, Executive Gardner. How are you this morning?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you, Bob?
I'm a little bleary-eyed this morning. I stayed up and watched the Capitals get that overtime victory against the Penguins, so...
Oh, there you go. You pay for it later, don't you?
Right. You absolutely do. Let's talk about a couple of things that, it's been a while since we talked to you, and there's so many things that happen in the, during the, you know, the 20 some odd days or whatever that we normally get to talk. So, I guess one of the things that I want to talk about is the budget process and where we stand on that.
Okay. Well, the, budget was introduced in the middle of April, on April 12th, and the council's had multiple meetings on it, and they'll actually be discussing it today at their 4:30 meeting. That some of the council members have proposed amendments to the budget,
okay,
and they will consider that. So they have to adopt the budget by the end of the month of May, and if they make any major changes, they do have to take it out to a public hearing. Again, so it's with the council right now. Again, they've met with the county agencies that they asked to meet with. They've had their public hearings, and they're going through some proposed amendments to the budget.
And one of the things that I'm sure of is that the council cannot add money to the budget. They can only subtract money, correct? And move money around. Can they move money around?
Not by the charter. By the charter, they can only cut the budget. They cannot add to the budget, with the exception of public education. If public education is not fully funded at the request that came from the Board of Ed, the council can add to education. And that's true with all charter governments across the state. So that's a state law that we have to follow. And but I have told the council every year since this administration's been in office, if they collectively agreed on something they wanted to cut and something they wanted to add, that I would consider that. So while there have been individual proposals to add some spending, there's never been a consensus to do that. So I can't obviously deal with, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 different proposals. They have to have a majority want to do something.
Okay. And it doesn't have to, it just has to be a majority. It's a simple majority. It doesn't have to be a unanimous decision, correct?
Right. That's now, right. Majority rules.
Right. Now, and if that happens, the majority rules, is that something that you okay? Or is it something that you can also just say, yeah, no, we're not going to do that?
I could say, no, we're not going to do that. So
okay.
I've said I would consider it.
Right.
I really need to know what it is before I can answer that. And so that hasn't happened. So several council members will put forward some amendments. And there are some amendments that are additions. And so I always find that very interesting that there are every year proposals to add things. And so it also needs to balance. You know, we're required by law to have a balanced budget. We're not the federal government. We can't run a deficit. We don't print money. We do balance our budget. So, Councilman DeLauder always puts forward probably the most amendments, but generally he has subtractions and adds. And so his subtraction and adds this year end up cutting about $2 million out of the budget. And one of the things he wants to cut is something that we're mandated to do. So, you know, that's already failed.
What would that be?
To have a vote. He wanted to cut some of the stormwater management requirements that we do for our stormwater permit.
Okay.
If we didn't comply with our stormwater permit, and we do comply with it at the minimum level we're required to, we could lose all of our grant money from the state. The consequences are pretty significant.
Well, and I don't know, I don't know enough about this, but I do know one thing is that every time I see something being built, there's a big retention pond beside it that didn't used to have to be, and I don't understand that. I mean, that's just beyond my comprehension that everything that gets built has to have some kind of a retention pond beside it now? Is that part of the stormwater management?
it's part of stormwater management. We used to have to build stormwater, big stormwater ponds for our new developments, but now the state has moved to requiring many smaller stormwater catchments. So they've actually made it more complicated because then there's more to maintain and inspect too. So if you have one large retention pond for a development versus 40 smaller ones, there's a big difference in maintenance and operation over time.
We're talking with the county executive, Jan Gardner, here on the Morning News Express. 627, it's the Morning News Express. One of the things that I know that you are trying to do, and that is give a raise to county employees. And when we talk about the budget, you mentioned it, you know, there has to be some give and take. There's only X amount of dollars. So where would you be taking and not using money that you would normally fund somewhere else that you're going to try to fund for salaries for county employees?
Basically, I'm not adding very few positions this year in the budget. I've added five positions to the 911 communications center because they have done a staffing study and they have really had a lot of call volume. If you think about it, with people having cell phones, when there is an accident or another kind of event, usually they don't get one call. They get dozens of calls, and they have to answer all those and make sure people are talking about the same incident, because sometimes if you're on 270 or an interstate, there could actually be two car accidents very close together. So I've added five staff there. Last year I added eight staff there. There was something reported in the paper that 911 was late on 60 calls. It was really one emergency call. That was before those eight people went online last October. And so we do have a good reputation for answering our 911 emergency calls.
We got to take a break. We'll have more with County Executive Jan Gardner on the Morning News Express. If you want a question, you can, of course, call here at 301-694-9360.
Your Dental Arts Morning News Express on 930 WFMD.
635 at WFMD. It's the Morning News Express along with the County Executive, Jan Gardner, on the phone with us this morning. Want to get right back to our conversation. I saw an article a while back, and it was at the council. Maybe this is something you were kind of already talking about, and that was that the council is looking to make some changes to the charter. When I hear something like that, I sometimes assume that maybe it's something that maybe you want, or maybe it's not something you want. I mean, how does the change to the charter, can you propose a change to the charter and give it to the council, or is that something that comes from the council?
Both. So I proposed one change to the council, and they proposed a few additional changes. And those changes will go through a public hearing process at the county council. And anything that passes the county council will then be put onto the ballot in November for people to vote on. So you can only change the charter if the citizens of the county vote to approve the change. So it's not something that the council or the county executive can do. The voters have to do that. So I proposed one charter amendment to allow for emergency legislation, which basically would simply allow a law to go into effect sooner than 60 days. And sometimes we need to do that. And a good example was when they had the spice issue in the city of Frederick. You know, they put a law in place that went into effect immediately. And in charter government, in our charter, all the bills go into effect 60 days after they're adopted by the council. And that 60-day time frame is there to allow people to petition that item to referendum, because under charter, most legislation that's passed by the council can be petitioned to referendum. And so, but it really doesn't make you very nimble in terms of passing a bill and having it go into effect right away if you're trying to solve an immediate problem. So that's a bill that, a charter amendment that I put in, and that bill would have to be advertised as an emergency bill. Every other charter government in the state has that type of legislation. The council has put in a charter amendment to allow them to add as well as subtract from the budget, and they've also wanted to extend the time frame of the budget consideration. There was an amendment in the last election that allowed that to happen, but they only expanded it about a week. And Jessica Fitzwater has put in an amendment to allow all county employees to collective bargain if they would want to.
Speaking of the city of Frederick, I had a conversation with the mayor, Michael O'Connor, a week or two ago, and one of the stories that I read and we started talking about was the city is looking into, not making a decision yet, of maybe getting into a class action lawsuit with against pharmaceutical companies, doctors who prescribe opioids. And is that something that, if you had a conversation with the mayor, or is that something that maybe the county would also look to jumping into and maybe becoming part of?
The answer to that is yes. The county is already looking in to do that. There are a lot of actual law firms that are out there interested in representing counties. A number of counties in the state of Maryland have joined into this. So I have asked the county attorney to put together a team of people to interview law firms to actually join in that class action suit. This is very similar to what happened, I don't know how many years ago, more than a decade ago, with the tobacco class action cases. And you really need to participate in it if you want to benefit from the outcome of those cases. So I do see us jumping into that. Obviously, the opioid and heroin addiction issue is a big deal in our community. I think everybody knows somebody, family, who has been impacted by that. And in my budget this year, I did put in one-time money, $500,000, to be used to try to incentivize a private sector or nonprofit detox substance abuse treatment center to open here in Frederick County. We don't have a detox center in Frederick County. There aren't very many of them in the state of Maryland, and we really need to expand the treatment side of this problem if we're going to adequately address it.
All right, we're going to talk more about that. We got to take another break. We'll talk more with the county executive, Jan Gardner, in the Morning News Express.
We're on our community page at bmcaccounting.com.
The talk of Mid-Maryland.
Biggest names in talk radio.
News Radio 930.
News, weather, traffic, it's there when I need it.
WFMD.
6:43, the Gremlins are working this morning. It's the Morning News Express. We continue on our conversation. We'll wrap it up with our county executive, Jan Gardner, here at the Morning News Express. I want to go back to, real quick, the grant money that you have put into the budget. I shouldn't say the money that you put into the budget, $500,000 for a treatment facility. That is also contingent on getting other funding, right? I mean, you can't. I mean, that $500,000 will not be able to do it on its own. You will have to have funding from either the state or private industry.
Yeah, I would want it to really ideally be from private industry. The idea, as we've talked about this, I do have a, what I call a harem consortium, which is all the agencies that work on this issue. And we've come up with estimated costs between $1 million and $2 million to actually stand up one of these detox substance treatment centers, because obviously you have to stand it up before you can bill it, even if you're billing private insurance or Medicaid, or if you maybe have a portion of that not being paid by anybody, but it can't be, you know, so you have to really incentivize somebody starting it up. So I see this as kind of a match, and certainly I'm not suggesting county government operate this. I'm really trying to incentivize somebody else to do that. And so I think it's a creative idea. It's been well received, and I think there will be interest in it. And we would put it out as an RFP, a request for proposals. Mm-hmm. Like we would do many of our other kind of purchasing activities.
And nobody takes the mantle and runs with it. That money just sits in the budget and then goes back into the normal coffers to be used somewhere else, somehow else as well, right?
Right. And okay. It is one-time money. So, yeah, okay. It would just go fall to the bottom line and be reallocated in a future budget if it's not utilized for that. So that's generally what we do with money that is unspent. It rolls forward and gets reallocated. We actually let that money sit for a year, so we make sure that we it's all audited money. That's been a practice of the county since sometime in the early 90s. One thing I do want to talk about is school mitigation fees. The county council had a public hearing on it on May 1st, and I proposed last fall that the council approve an increase in the school construction or school mitigation fee. And this is not an impact fee. It's an additional fee that the prior Board of County Commissioners put in place to allow a housing developer to buy out of school adequacy. So if they failed the school adequacy test, they could pay this fee and continue to build. And that fee has not been updated since 2014. And so I did propose what is a relatively significant increase in that fee. But I do believe that if we are going to allow a housing developer to build once schools are overcrowded, they have to pay the cost of creating that.
Why is that? Why is it that new development has to pay but existing houses do not?
Well, because existing taxpayers don't want to have to subsidize new development. I mean, that's the fundamental issue of it. And
But hang on a second. If I live in Frederick, I live in Woodsboro now, and I'm like, you know what? I'm tired of living, my beautiful, spacious 1-acre barn. I want to go live downtown in a big old townhouse or somewhere else. I'm going to have to pay a fee that I'm not changing any. I'm not doing anything different. I'm not being different.
You probably wouldn't have to pay this fee because this fee is only paid by some developments that want to build where schools are overcrowded and there's no school in the plan. I personally believe we should have never, ever allowed this fee in the first place. And we did eliminate it as an option for future development. But this is contracted with about 15 developments, and it allows them to build no matter how overcrowded the school is if they pay this fee. So it is completely different from an impact fee. It is not paid by every development. It is paid when schools fail as a buyout. So for 25 years, we had an adequate public facilities ordinance, and if you failed it, the development had to wait until the county could provide the school, or they had to build it themselves. And we did have one developer build an addition onto Tuscarora High School. And so we functioned very well that way for 25 years. The last administration decided they wanted this buyout. To the best of my knowledge, we're the only county in the state that intentionally allows somebody to buy out of our adequate school facilities law. So,
how much is the buyout?
Pardon me?
How much would the buyout be? I mean, what's the difference in cost?
If you fail, most of the projects fail at one level, elementary school, middle school, or high school. I think there are two developments that fail at all three levels. So you only pay at the level you fail. So right now, if you're a single family home and you fail at the elementary school, you pay just under $4,000. If you fail at the middle school, you pay $1,750. If you fail at the high school, you pay $3,721. So if it's a townhouse, you pay a different amount. And if it's a multifamily, you pay a different amount. So the idea of this, as it was proposed, and it was proposed by the development community and the Young administration that preceded me, was that this was a way to support the building industry. So does it potentially add to the cost of a home? Yes, it potentially does if the developer can recover that when they sell that home. But, you know, our job in county government is to protect our existing taxpayers. That's my number one goal, to try to get growth to pay its way and to make sure that we have the infrastructure in place. And this whole buyout option really works against that. So for the developments that have it, that have a contract to allow them to do this, I really feel that they need to pay the full freight so that existing taxpayers don't have to pay it. It's optional to them. If they don't want to pay it, they could wait until the schools actually are adequate.
And there it is, the last word from the County Executive Jan Gardner. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks, Bob. You have a great day, too.
Thank you for being part of the Morning News Express. 649 at WFMD.